Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to The Greek Current, a podcast by the Hellenic American Leadership Council and Kathy Merini, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HELC staff. As Bulgaria prepares for its second election in 3 months on July 11th, Bulgarians are confronted by a number of political scandals and allegations of corruption. Some of these allegations include accusations against the former Prime Minister Boyko Borisov, who has dominated Bulgarian politics over the last decade. Meanwhile, the United States has also upped the pressure on Bulgaria, introducing anti-corruption sanctions against certain high-profile Bulgarian power brokers and entities, while the EU has not taken any steps. Expert Dimitar Bechev, a non-resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, joins The Greek Current to discuss what's at stake in this upcoming election in Bulgaria, the various allegations of corruption, U.S. sanctions, and the role of the European Union. Dimitar, welcome back on The Greek Current. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Dimitar, ahead of crucial elections in Bulgaria, a number of scandals have emerged within the last months as Bulgarians prepare for elections on July 11th. Can you set the stage for us, however, as we head into these elections? Who are the main players in the election, and what's at stake this round?
Well, essentially, there's this center-right party headed by the prime minister, or the previous prime minister, Boyko Borisov. The acronym is GERB. They've been in power for the better part of the past decade, but they've been losing ground lately, especially since last summer when Bulgaria saw a wave of anti-corruption demonstrations. And then you have a disparate set of various parties, notably ITN, which is spearheaded by popular TV host, musician Slavi Trifonov. It emerged as a second force in April, and now with a repeat election, it's very likely it will come neck to neck with Borisov's GERB. There's the former Communist Party, which traditionally was the main opposition force, but they haven't quite picked up on this opposition momentum. And also, there are a number of lesser players. One to single out is Democratic Bulgaria. It's a coalition drawing on the votes of urban, middle-class, upward mobile Bulgarians who are pro-Western and are the kind of natural pro-reform constituency in the country.
The scandals that have emerged have shed light in the lead up to this election on corruption in Bulgaria. And in a piece in Politico in which you're quoted, they write that Bulgaria, which is the EU's poorest nation, has a long history of corruption, noting, however, that the sheer scale of the latest revelations are new. What are some of the main accusations or allegations that are out there right now?
Well, I do agree. It's not that we didn't know about state capture and high-level graft in the country, but when it came through a parliamentary committee in the short-lived parliament we had for a couple of weeks after the April election, and now through the caretaker government, there's this stamp of approval. And let's not forget also the U.S. government chipping in, giving credence to those allegations. But very shortly for your listeners, these are several strands of accusations to do with misappropriation of EU money, extortion, and generally abuse of power. And there's some facts and figures involved. But again, I mean, Bulgaria has been discussing that, even if media situation has been deteriorating for nearly a decade. But what is really different is having official authorities, both at the national level, but also internationally, coming into the picture.
The former Prime Minister Borisov, who has dominated Bulgarian politics, Dimitar, over the last decade, he seems to be at the center of some of these allegations. And there are some who are asking whether these scandals will mark a tipping point that spells the end of the Borisov era in Bulgaria. Do you think that this is the case?
Well, before I get to this question, just very briefly, Borisov is certainly part of the story, but it's not only about him, because state capture is unfortunately a more widespread phenomenon. So it's not just about this personality, but the way the system works. And there have been all kinds of beneficiaries of those practices, including some sitting in the opposition. But even if Borisov is not the next prime minister, and judging from the last election, the likelihood is not as high, he will probably end up as the leader of the largest party in parliament. So I won't just write him off at this stage, although it's certain that he's losing ground. I mean, if you draw a comparison, think about Bibi Netanyahu in Israel, who is now dethroned, as it were, after a decade in power, but he's still there in the Knesset. So something of the sort will happen to Borisov.
You brought up how the United States has chipped in into this debate briefly in one of your answers, and I want to explore that a little more. We've seen the United States take note of corruption issues in Bulgaria and introduce sanctions earlier this month. What steps is the United States taking?
Well, sustainably, these are not that hard-hitting steps, because the people they highlighted probably don't have assets in the U.S. and probably at this stage are not very keen to travel there. But they matter symbolically because they put the U.S. into the Bulgarian dynamic. And also, it might shift votes away from GERB, which again portrays itself as a pro-Western power in line with both the EU and NATO and the U.S. Now they've come under fire because some of their clients are singled out. Although, to be honest, they're trying to spin it because the U.S. government has also singled out oligarchs, adults with Borisov. But we'll see on the 11th of July. I think it might tip the scales, and every vote counts, as we know.
How have Bulgarian authorities reacted to the steps taken by the U.S.?
Well, like I said, we have a caretaker government, so they don't have a dog in this fight. They're not running for re-election. They broadly applauded the steps taken, including the sitting president who appointed the caretaker government. But similarly, Borisov said that he is not put on the spot. And some of the people singled out there, notably a guy called Vasil Boshkov, who's a fugitive from justice in Dubai, that he has also come and he's in the crosshairs of the U.S. government. So they try to spin it as something that actually vindicates their policies. Again, I think it's a more complicated story. And GERB has a lot of skeletons buried, and it's embarrassing for them as well. But all parties are playing along, and there's no pushback, really, because when you have a foreign government, and that's the Bulgarian attitude. If somebody criticizes the Bulgarian authorities for state capture, the public probably agrees because they believe it a priori. You're preaching to the choir, as it were.
The European Union has not shown any inclination to intervene in this fight, as the United States has done. Why is that? Why are we seeing less of an initiative on the EU side?
Well, for the simple reason that Bulgaria is a member state. It's not a third country, and it holds votes in EU institutions. When Bulgaria was applying for membership, it was a different game altogether. You had the power to pressure and to demand reforms, not so much after 2007 when Bulgaria acceded. Now, to be fair to the EU, they've used on a number of occasions the nuclear option that is cutting financial aid to Bulgaria. That happened in 2009, 2014, and ripple effects were felt in Sofia right away. You had government change. So the EU has used its formal powers, but again, there's as much you can do against the member state. There's the cases also of Poland and Hungary suggest. And one final remark, what kept Borisov afloat over long term vis-a-vis Brussels is he never picked the fights on issues of common concern. That's the difference with the Poles and the Hungarians. Borisov moves with the mainstream. He's close to Angela Merkel. Also, he has a good working relationship with Emmanuel Macron and the whole lot. And unfortunately, EU is a slow-moving machine in international political, member state politics, ultimately matters. But the U.S. government has a louder voice and less of a stake, and they can do more.
Looking outside of Bulgaria, how does this political crisis impact the region and the institutions that Bulgaria is a part of, primarily NATO, which just held the summit, and the European Union, which we briefly touched on?
Well, it impacts them only marginally because, again, Bulgaria is located in the periphery. And what happens in Sofia doesn't have a sea change effect at the central level. But at least looking from the vantage point of U.S. foreign policy, which I guess is what many of your listeners will be following, it gives some credence to Biden administration's kind of call for push against kleptocracy across the world. It's not a one-off, right? Because you've seen similar moves in former Yugoslavia, maybe because with an executive order which kind of promises further actions and lists of people across this region. The former Albanian Prime Minister Salih Berisha has been blacklisted. So it seems to me that the U.S. is taking a more muscular approach in this part of the world where actually it has influence and the geopolitical risks are not as high. And also there's a demand from societies for a more robust Western action. So I think that's the main thing that matters in terms of the bigger picture.
Keeping our focus on the broader region, the Western Balkans, primarily North Macedonia and Albania, have joined NATO and are hoping to begin the accession process with the European Union. Bulgaria, however, has put a hold on this as a result of disagreements with North Macedonia. How will these elections impact the diplomatic role between Bulgaria and North Macedonia and the EU enlargement process. Do you think a new Bulgarian government would be more flexible on this issue?
I really hope so, although it will be a very disparate coalition. And there will be surely different voices. Just a caveat, Borisov was not necessarily the problem with this Bulgarian blockage, because I guess he had a pragmatic approach. But having been in coalition with the far right set some limits on his action. But I suppose Macedonians were expecting that Borisov would strike a deal if he stayed in power. But since he's not probably forming government, those calculations have proven wrong. But anyway, I mean, I've been on the record criticizing the Bulgarian approach because it's not very productive, even from the vantage point of Bulgarian national interests. And I do hope that the next government, whatever its makeup, will actually take this step and let the negotiations start. It's really important for the region that the EU delivers on its promises.
Dimitar, thanks for joining us on The Greek Current, and thanks for this analysis.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
In other news, a fire protection program budgeted at 1.76 billion euros will replace old water-dropping airplanes and allow the hire of 3,000 permanent firefighters, Greece's Citizen Protection Minister Michalis Chrysochoidis and Deputy Civil Protection Minister Nikos Kardalias announced on Tuesday. The ministers described the proposed plan as the largest procurement program to date for non-military use. Kardalias said that the core of the plan revolves around locating a fire fast and responding quickly. The plan will be discussed at the interministerial meeting taking place on Wednesday. Finally, the United States and the European Union have agreed a truce in a 17-year trade dispute over subsidies for Boeing and Airbus. Under the agreement, both sides will remove taxes on $11.5 billion worth of goods for 5 years. President Biden held a summit with EU leaders on Tuesday, where he also worked to build support for a more assertive stance towards Russia and China. Additionally, in a joint statement following these meetings, the European Union and the United States stressed the need for a sustainable de-escalation of tensions in the Eastern Mediterranean. The leaders added that differences should be settled through dialogue in good faith and in accordance with international law. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.